Hey, Jeff, it's Chris Casey calling. You may remember me. We produced a web series together several years ago. Anyway, it's been a decade, but I thought I'd call and see how you are. And there's an alternate reality where we haven't been speaking to each other for nearly 10 years.
This is episode 2 of 1F Jeff.
Number 2 is the smallest and only even prime number, and it often represents balance or duality, like in yin and yang.
I'm your host, Jeff Taylor. I forgot to mention that in the first episode, but that's who I am.
The guest today is Chris Casey.
本日のゲストはクリス・ケイシーさんです。
L'ospite di oggi è Chris Casey.
Chris Casey is a human that I met in Brooklyn, New York in 2014. He'd agreed to produce a web series that I was developing called Adults.
Adults.
Which we went on to make together.
It's a jolly good web series.
He produced it, I directed it, we both acted in it, and we're both proud of it.
You remember me from Jennifer's wedding? You and Jennifer got married. I was there. We all talked. We had such a great time.
Did we?
You don't remember that?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I remember you because you were brilliant. You were going on and on. You had all these great ideas. It was like electric, like fire.
You can find it on YouTube if you're interested. I'll put a link in the show notes.
Chris Casey is an Emmy Award-winning producer, director, and showrunner based in Brooklyn.
He also leaves funny voicemail messages.
Hello, this is Christopher Manginesi with the Pope's office calling because you have been selected to be the next Jesus. Bubba, it's your Auntie Margaret calling. I haven't heard from you in a while. And this character, I didn't think about it enough, and I don't have any jokes for it.
Your vibrating masturbation sleeve is available for pickup.
Chris Casey is the kind of guy who out of the blue will send you a text message that says, "Hey, just wanted to let you know that I really appreciate and value your friendship." That's who Chris Casey is.
And he's a swell guy.
I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Here's Chris Casey. All right, so we're here with Chris Casey, and he just told me that he's prepared in every way
I'm
to record this podcast
way.
In every way. And I just asked, what does that actually mean, prepared in every way?
It's in every way one can prepare for something like this, something such a landmark occasion in one's life. I'm prepared. I feel like every moment leading up to this has just been preparation for this conversation.
Oh, so nothing like physical or anything like that, just like you're mentally prepared is what you're saying.
I'm mentally prepared. I'm spiritually prepared.
Oh, that's good.
Nutritionally, you know, I had some kind of Lebanese food, which is sitting a little weird, I'll be honest. But
it's usually pretty healthy. It's got a lot of veggies.
It's healthy. It is healthy. But I had like this fried cauliflower thing. I think that was the culprit.
Cauliflower. That's how you pronounce it with the I. Cauliflower.
What? How do you pronounce it?
Cauliflower.
Cauliflower.
You said cauliflower.
Yeah. Cauliflower.
We're off to a good start, I think.
I think so.
So this is the podcast. This is it. This is it right here. This is it. We're doing it. I'm doing it. You're doing it. We're on the podcast.
I'm thrilled to be on it, and it really feels like it's been a long time coming, this podcast.
Right. I've been thinking about this for years, and then I learned how to do it at my last job, which will go unnamed, and thought, hey, I've got this equipment. It's not hard anymore. Here's an easy way to make $1 million, am I right?
Yeah, it's very easy, famously easy to make $1 million.
Yeah, podcasting. I think a couple months is all you need. 1 or 2 months, I think, is pretty much the standard I've read.
I think the best strategy is to record like 2 or 3 episodes, then let 6 or 7 months go by.
That's the plan.
Then you do an update apologizing for why there's been a gap, and then another year goes by. And
that
then,
is my plan.
Yeah. Then you sell it. Sell it for $1 million.
They love gappy things that have gaps. People love to wait. Anticipation is a lot. And I feel like that's kind of what I'm going to be setting the table for, is like people will get used to this. They'll be like, oh, I understand what this is now, even though the host doesn't seem to understand what it is. And then they'll be, I can't wait to hear more. And then it'll be nothing for a while.
Yeah, it's great because I feel like over the last 10 years, people have become much more patient.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Me for certain. Yeah. Old movies with black and white. I just eat them up.
You know, I will say though, I watched Mulholland Drive last night, which is pretty slow and kind of has a 90s thing going on, but I was enthralled.
I've never been a fan of that one.
Really?
Yeah, no, I found it to be empty and didn't care about the characters. Felt like it was just some, I don't know, it almost felt sci-fi-y to me, because it's sci-fi, my big issue with sci-fi a lot of the time is the characters are just kind of like pawns to express the science fiction idea, which in this case wasn't really an idea in as much as like a nightmarish scenario playing out. But I just didn't care about the characters, and I need to be able to connect in some way.
I hear what you're saying. I think that it was definitely leaned more aesthetic than like grounded in character, for sure. But it is also like a dream kind of exploration.
Right. I mean, that's David Lynch, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And but and also, you know, it's that like, I love that campy thing he does where it's like that 90s campy, all the lighting's really kind of cheesy and campy, but everything really works and it's self-aware. I was into it.
I did like the other one, the Lost Highway one, quite a bit.
After we watch that, I want to go through his oeuvre.
Yeah, because I was
inspired.
Because I was a Marilyn Manson fan, so I think that was part of it. Because he was, the soundtrack to The Lost Highway was quite good.
Yeah.
Back in my Marilyn Manson fan days.
Was that a big phase for you?
I wouldn't say big, but there was about, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 years in college that I saw one of his concerts. I went to West Virginia, and there were people outside, like, praying for our souls. Begging us not to go in. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
I pray for your soul sometimes still.
I do too. I appreciate that. Doesn't mean anything coming from you, could be quite honest, because who are you praying to? You know, I mean,
I'm praying to the universe. What do you mean it doesn't mean anything coming from
you? I'm just saying, because if you're praying to a God, right? You know, there's no God up there.
Listen, if anyone's going to be praying for you, it's me, okay? You should appreciate the prayers that I'm giving.
I appreciate that.
You.
I appreciate
Jesus
it.
Christ.
Oh, see, there. Now you're using his name in vain. This is my point.
He's not in vain. He would agree. He'd be like,
he would.
Come on, Jeff. Let's go. Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
Accept the prayers ye have and not spite them, said the Lord.
Is that what he said?
Yeah.
Which book did he?
It's Josh 903.
That's my favorite, actually, Josh.
Yeah.
So what's new? What's on your mind, Chris?
Well, I guess the main thing that's on my mind is, you know, what are we doing here?
What's a podcast?
Yeah. What is this podcast? I know you've got some episodes in the can. That's jargon for having recorded episodes. But
wow, thanks for the explainer. Yeah.
Well, not everybody's in the biz. You know.
No, I understand. Yeah.
Not everyone had a high profile name, so high profile it cannot be named job at a podcasting operation.
We're gonna have a glossary though with this podcast, so that all the terms that people might not understand, they can refer to the glossary.
An extensive show notes. Do you have a dramaturg?
Big time. I've got so many. I've got like several dramaturgs.
Research assistants?
Yeah, lots of dramaturgs. Why am I doing the podcast? It's a thing I've been wanting to do for years. You know, I've recorded things in the past. I think we even recorded an interview years and years ago.
That rings true.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's a good excuse, number one, to like have interesting conversations with these people that I normally wouldn't have. But beyond that, I feel like we've also kind of lost the ability to converse in the last 5 to 10 years, to have actual real conversations where we're actually you know, listening to the other person and responding to them, as opposed to, you know, waiting for your turn.
Anyway, so I was thinking about...
Ba-da-ba-boo. Hey. I need to get the sound effects head up so I can get a rim shot.
You should get a little button panel.
I'm working on it. Don't you worry. Why do you think I'm doing the podcast, Chris? You know me pretty well.
I relate to you in this way. I think that we work in a similar way, which is like people with very like active imaginations and a lot of ideas. I think ideas tend to have to like percolate for a long time and sort of do battle with each other in the subconscious before one of them wins out to kind of like jump on the opportunity. I mean, you have some fertile ground right now for creativity because you just, as you said, left that job. You know, I think you're in like an exploratory moment in general. And then this idea has been percolating and it suits your talents and gifts. So I think the time is just ripe, and you know, people who listen to it are going to like it. You know, you don't need to make any advertisers happy at the moment.
Listeners, are you listening? You're going to like it.
You're going to like it.
Okay, good.
If you're listening to this point, I mean, how many minutes in are we here?
I don't know. I don't know where there's no clock that I can see.
At this point, either you're in distress, you might be having a stroke, and this was playing at the very beginning of the stroke, and if that's the case, strength to you. Otherwise, you're enjoying it. You're going to like it.
Yeah. And if you don't, then you are wrong. Your taste is incorrect.
I, on the other hand, understand why you might not like it.
Oh, Why might people not like it?
I mean, it might not be their cup of tea.
Oh, I guess some people just don't care about long rambling conversations about whatever it is that we end up talking about.
Yeah, podcasts talking about the podcast that they're on.
Right. Very meta. Very meta.
Yeah. Yep. Meta, but also is probably pretty common for early podcasts.
Sure. But I also will say that I think that the popularity of these long rambling podcasts, not that this is a rambling by any means at all. This is
I'm very prepared.
Yeah. But I think the popularity of those that's blown up over the last 5 to 10 years kind of correlates with the loss of the ability to converse, because people, instead of actually conversing, they'll just sit there and listen to other people converse.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. It's that parasocial relationship where, you know, it's like when you watch pornography, you think you're having sex. It's like part of your brain does. It's when you're listening to other people talk, rambling in a way you would talk at a diner, that part of the serotonin is like going off in your brain.
Oh, that's interesting that you compared the podcast to pornography. I'll take it.
Yeah, it's very arousing. It's very stimulating.
Maybe I should call it pornography, just pornography. There's already probably 20 podcasts called pornography.
Finding a name for a podcast is not easy in 2025.
That's the hardest part so far. I've got a whole list that I just don't know what to settle on. But at some point, once I actually start releasing these things, I got to actually start to settle. By this point, by the time you're listening to this, listener, there will be a name, I would assume. Or maybe it'll just be a blank space where the podcast name goes.
Do you want to record a few of those like bumper things, and then you can just use AI to fill in the blank? I'll be like, hi, listener. This is Chris Casey, and you're listening to
1F Jeff the Podcast.
So what's been in your wheels these days, Chris Casey?
I surprised my mom for Mother's Day last week. Not to put the date stamp on this, but this was recorded the week after Mother's Day. I flew down to Delray Beach, Florida, not to dox my parents, but that is where they live. And I surprised my mom. So I got there around 3 o'clock, and I did not call her before then. So she was very angry at me.
Oh.
And then I surprised her. So it was kind of like the perfect push-pull of emotional intensity.
Right.
She went from being pretty pissed to being very happy and surprised.
You kind of fucked with her.
Yeah, a little bit. But, you know, at least it went the way from bad to good emotion. So we only remembered the good.
And how long did that last?
The appreciation of my presence?
Yeah.
It was pretty consistent, I think. There was appreciation. Good. You know, it's like, yeah, because there's no time to prepare. So it was like, there was more appreciation, I'd say, even. I also finally, I think, found the right amount of time for the trip to Florida is 4 days. That's my sweet spot.
Yeah, that's about right. That's about, I go to see my mom, but I see her far off, and then I see you see your parents, but I'll go for like 3 days, and that's about as long as I can.
Right.
So how is your relationship with your mom these days?
It's good. You know, I'm realizing that we're not a very affectionate family, like hugging and like physical touch. And I think that it would be good for me to start introducing that, because I just feel like it's not occurred to anybody. There's not like an aversion to it, but for whatever reason, whatever happened to all of us in our childhood and our family line, it's just not a very, you know, it's an Irish, more of an Irish thing. As a child, I felt very, invaded by my mother. I was an only child. And so I had this big barrier up to kind of keep my sovereignty as best I could. And so I think that's probably it, but there's no need for that, you know, as an adult. And I think we would all really benefit from it. So, you know, my relationship now, it's probably the best it's ever been in my adult life.
That's good.
Yeah. And, honestly, it's just because I feel like I am just taking more responsibility for the relationship and not needing her to be a certain way. And it's just interesting. The more I do that, the more she kind of relaxes and isn't as triggering. I don't know if it's my perceptions changing or she's changing and we're all getting older and something, but I feel like it's been a good evolution in the last 3 or 4 years.
Well, it's like when you're a kid, you kind of expect your parents to be the ones to like initiate whatever that is, right? And then as you get older, you realize, oh, I can own this too.
And now, when I was a kid, I initiated a lot. I think I was a pretty affectionate little kid, you know, but for some reason, something shifts. It's just interesting. There are some families where, you know, that physical affection always just persists. I always associated it with families where there were a lot of siblings for some reason, but then I'm sure there are repressed Irish sibling families too. But Yeah, I don't know. So once you get past like 7 or 8 years old, it something changes and it's not as physically affectionate for some reason.
I remember introducing the phrase "I love you" to my family as an adult and starting to say, which is crazy, right? And they were like, "Oh, well, I love you too."
Yeah, I remember we kind of started picking up "I love you." It was not like we were ever not saying it that much, but I was so triggered by my parents that I like would end many phone calls without saying "I love you." And now we always say it. So, right. And I think my dad says it a lot more. And I think I don't know if that's just getting older or what, but you know, I think men do soften up a lot as they get older, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. My dad was a big, you know, the huggers who will pat you on your back frantically. Yeah. He was one of those. There was never, it didn't feel like ever like a real hug. It was always just kind of a pat, pat. Hug.
Yeah, I get a real hug when I first land at the airport pickup, and I do a real hug right before getting back on the plane on the airport drop off. Those are the two like multiple Mississippi hugs, or really probably the only ones in the whole trip. It's like those are the hugging moments. Why not a good morning hug? Why not a good night hug? Why not a just walked in from somewhere? You know, I mean.
Well,
I guess
at a certain
you don't
have to
point, go
overboard
with it.
A little bit excessive, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You just pooped. Yeah. You just
happy
went to the bathroom hug.
Here.
Yeah. No, I mean it's the same. But even when I will like hug my sister when I see her, it's not a long hug, and I can feel it kind of makes her uncomfortable. At least it feels like that to me in a little bit. So
yeah.
But then my relatives, my aunt and uncle, they're super big huggers. I mean, they're Italian, so that maybe has something to do with it. I don't know. Not to racially stereotype.
No,
here, but...
I mean, the Italians are way more affectionate. That's true.
But you have Italian in you, so it's odd that it's like this Irish-Italian mix, but the Irish wins out.
I know it is odd. Both of my grandmas are Italian, but they're neither of them were all that affectionate either. You know, my living grandmother is not at all, and my grandmother who passed, she was a little more so, but. I didn't see her that often, so I never felt comfortable. You know, when you go around an old person that you don't see that often, you're a little kid, it's like kind of weird.
I only had one grandparent growing up. They were all dead before I was born, except for one, which put a lot of pressure on her in a way, but she really stepped up to the pressure and was a very good grandparent. Epic stories about her.
That's good.
You know, I grew up in the Midwest. I don't know what like Connecticut's like, but Midwest, very repressed in a way, like, you know, not a lot of talking about things other than surfacey talks, but nothing. We're not getting deep, generally speaking, in the Midwest. And I don't care for that. I feel like that's a part of me that I've never really, I still struggle with it, but I feel like maybe that's even another reason for the podcast is an effort to like overcome the Midwest stoicness or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So you're going on a meditative retreat in a week or two, aren't
you? Yes, in a little over a week.
What's the goal here?
The goal is to, I think first, there's many.
Well, tell us about the retreat first, and then
retreat is a Vipassana retreat. Vipassana is like a particular meditation technique. And the retreat is a 10-day long retreat. It's a silent retreat. So you don't talk for the 10 days that you're there, and you're just in meditation, I think. For a portion of it, there's a mindfulness meditation, and then they begin to instruct you in the Vipassana technique, and you practice that for the remainder of the 10 days.
Do you know what the Vipassana technique is?
You know, I haven't been doing a lot of reading about it because I don't want to, I'd kind of want to just take it in the way it's meant to be taught.
Sure.
But okay. I know it's I believe it has something to do with body scanning. And kind of going into sensation, like experiencing yourself in a sensational way.
So elements of mindful meditation, and they all kind of blend together in a way.
Yeah. I think I'm mentally preparing for it to be extremely challenging.
Sure. You can't even write, no pencils or pens or anything.
No writing, no reading, no exercise. So they discourage like yoga and things like that.
You can go for a walk.
Yeah,
though.
But they don't want you walking too fast. You want to be in a meditative walking. The idea is to be to actually experience yourself as a sensation and not as a thought object. And like, it's not easy to do that. I take for granted at least how much I'm in my head.
Sure.
Or maybe I not take for granted, but I don't realize. And if you actually sit you know, or if I actually sit and try to experience myself as sensationally, what is the feeling state? Not emotional, but like the literal feeling of being me. It's hard to stick with that, but it's very nourishing to do that. So I think my goal is to just get a real taste of that and hopefully to install in myself a, you know, a memory of what that experience is, so that when I go into my meditation, like back in my normal life, I have that state of being to get closer and closer to, you know? So right. I think that's the idea. I want to be deeper in my meditative practice. And I think this will be a good, just like, you know, I did that yoga teacher training and I was much deeper in my yoga practice afterwards, just by virtue of having immersed myself in it.
Sure.
So I think that'll be, that's what I'm hoping for.
Well, I'm genuinely curious because I don't think that I could do maybe 3 days, maybe four, but I don't think I could do 10 days.
So many people say that. Everyone I tell about this says that they don't think they could do it.
I'm interested to know how it goes, because I would feel like the first day would be a hard day. The second day is probably a hard day. But then probably after the couple of days, you start to like, you either continue to resist or you fall into a place where you're like, oh, here I am.
Yeah, I think there might be a sort of acceptance that it happens. You know, in some of the like plant medicine work that I facilitate, they draw the comparison to this pilot, Chuck Yeager, who was the first to break the sound barrier in a plane. And he wasn't the first to try. There were a lot that would attempt it. But, you know, when you are approaching the sound barrier, the plane really starts to rattle. And so pilots would go back. And he just kind of gunned it through that. And then, you know, obviously, once you break the sound barrier, there's that sonic boom. And then it's like this complete silence because you're ahead of all the sound, even the sound of your own aircraft.
Right.
So that is like a metaphor for like, you know, just being in acceptance of that turbulence. And then often on the other side, there's kind of this big open space. And I've been told by some people who've done this that it's like a 4 or 5 days that get harder and harder. And then there's kind of a breakthrough experience. But I'm trying not to have that expectation because God knows.
Well, you know, it's impossible not to have expectations because, you know,
yeah.
Interesting that, you know, an ancient practice like meditation is using a thing about breaking the sound barrier as a metaphor for, I mean, it works.
Yeah. So yeah, well, definitely we'll see. I mean, I'm excited. It's not so much to like get rid of my thoughts or anything, or like thinking. It's just like, it's just rebalancing, you know. People up until recently just did not have so much input and output as we do now.
Yeah.
You know, even the last 100 years or so, it's become crazy. There's a lot of time in human history where people were just fucking sitting around, mm-hmm. doing nothing, not thinking, not talking, you know, just kind of hanging out. And I think we're just like, I can feel that I'm out of balance.
It's very hard to be bored in today's world. Like, you have to deliberately try to find boredom.
Yeah. And it's very painful and agitating to be bored.
But when I was younger, I feel like I was bored a lot.
Yes, me too.
And it was kind of okay.
Yeah, I had such an amazing imagination. I feel like my imagination has atrophied so much since I've gotten older.
Yeah.
You know, that's something I was thinking about today is I'm sure there is some modality or something, but I'd love to explore like literally training my, like the visual part of my imagination more, because I have an imagination for ideas and concepts, but closing my eyes and visualizing something and really seeing it richly, it's like pitiful. I can barely like draw like a house in my brain.
Yeah. I often wonder if that's how much of it is attributable to being just getting older and your mind kind of
it's
changing.
Practice. It's like, you need to practice that. You can't just, if you stop doing it, you're going to lose the ability to do it.
Yeah.
Everything that's like in a world started as an imagination, you know? There's like, except for, I guess, nature, you know, that's just happening. But all
that's
the stuff that's
God's
made.
Imagination, Chris. That's God's imagination.
We're all God's imagination.
Mm. Wow.
That's what you should call the podcast, God's Imagination.
No, that's your podcast, bro.
I know.
That's yours. Yeah.
That would be good.
I think that's probably already been done too. I mean, I haven't looked it up yet, but I'm just guessing off the top of my head that's probably
God's imagination is so rich that he's definitely created.
Any clever 2 or 3 word podcast title has already been taken. Oftentimes more than once.
Yeah.
But I mean, we made a web series that now there's like three or four series that are now called adults.
I know.
So, and we all know who the best ones is.
We have to call our entertainment lawyer.
We have to call our entertainment lawyer when we get an entertainment lawyer.
You've been paying the retainer, right?
Yes. God, that was 9 years ago.
Yeah, man. Things are becoming a long time away now.
Yeah, time's a weird one as you get older, too. It's like when I was in my 30s, I was still at a place where I understood the timeline. Like I could see every little piece. I could be like, oh, that happened and this happened and this happened and this happened. But once I got to like 40, 45, it all started to get a little bit confused. Like I started to lose track of what happened. You know, you forget little pieces of it and it wasn't as quite a clear timeline, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And now 51, I mean, I still, you know, have a timeline, but like, I have to like literally like be like, oh yeah, that did happen, didn't it? Or that did happen. And frankly, it's great
because it frees up some of your brain. That's a good thing.
Forgetting is a good thing. Don't look back.
Forgetting is a great thing. It's like, if you could just forget things, it would be so much easier to just do what you want to do in life.
Well, right. It's the whole thing that's limiting you, right? Isn't it? Like, you know, all the things that you were, all the memories of failures and successes in your life, and then all the anxiety about what could happen if you could free yourself of all these things and you could literally do anything, right?
Yep.
But, you know, memories are also nice sometimes, right? Happy memories.
I guess. Like, if you could experience pure bliss, would you be willing to abandon your personality completely?
I don't know what pure bliss entails.
That's besides the point. I mean, just if in theory there is a thing such as pure bliss, of course you can't know what it feels like.
What if I abandon my personality for this and I'm disappointed by it? I'm like, this is actually not that great.
You wouldn't be. Your personality is the part of you that's getting disappointed.
Oh, I see. But then, like, am I just like some cosmic being? Like, I mean, what happens to my relationships when I have no personality?
I don't know.
Oh. I mean, it's difficult, but would you do it? Would you abandon your personality for pure bliss?
Probably. Yeah. Probably.
How long would the pure bliss last? Just forever? Or?
I don't know. These are things we have to work out.
Do you think that there's people in the world living with pure bliss?
Yes, definitely.
Who?
I don't know. They're somewhere and sitting quietly somewhere. They don't.
How do I get them on the podcast? Because I'd love to talk to them about
it. You'd probably find somebody.
Somebody who's living in pure bliss. I would poke holes in their bliss. I'd be like, you're not really living in pure bliss.
I don't think if someone was living in pure bliss, I don't think you'd be able to poke holes in it.
You're thought like some Buddhist somewhere, as you're saying, like
could be anybody, but I don't think that they're out there talking about it.
I don't think they've had to abandon their personality for bliss.
No, but they probably have I think what you would probably encounter as somewhat strange personality, like a very detached, not quite there personality.
Chris, do you ever think about going to like living on a Buddhist retreat somewhere? Is this something that you'd be?
I literally am going to do that in a week.
Well, but like in what, Massachusetts though? I mean, I'm talking about like going to like fucking Nepal or something.
Sure. I think I missed the boat on being like a full on monk. The best I could probably do is get that next life around, maybe.
Sure.
Because
sure.
I think you have to, if you like these monks, they choose them when they're like kids.
Some of them
and
do.
They put them.
Not all of
in
them.
These monasteries.
I mean,
Ram Dass, but the ones who really get there. I mean, Ram Dass, he got helped along by doing a shitload of psychedelics.
Yeah.
But like these kids, they go in and like it's not religion. They're literally there in basically like an intense mind training protocol that lasts for their entire lives. And I think these people at a very high level, they can do crazy stuff. I mean, they're existing on a level of sensitivity where they're aware of all of these aspects of reality that the rest of us are fairly numb to because we're so in our head.
They should do a TV show about like people deciding to become monks.
Isn't there is a Dalai Lama movie from like the 90s, isn't there?
I don't
like
know.
The Golden Kingdom or the, and I remember where I was watching at my next door neighbor, John Schenkman's house when I was like
Schenkmeister
12.
General.
Yeah.
Did you call him the Schenkmeister General?
No.
Oh, well, missed opportunity there.
Yeah. We didn't have that kind of a jokey relationship.
Oh, I see. Just movie watching then.
Yeah. Movie watching, video game playing, like make believe, going around the woods, kind of, you know what I mean? That kind of thing.
Yeah. That's
it was fun.
Yeah. Kids don't really do that anymore. They don't really go outside too much anymore. A lot of inside stuff.
I didn't know that. Is that true? They don't go outside?
I mean, they do, but not nearly as much. Like when I was a kid, we would just like, I would get on my bike and just ride around the neighborhood and hang out with the kids in the neighborhood all day, right? But I don't think that that's nearly as prevalent as it used to be.
I'm sad for that because that was like some of the best times of my life, I think.
Yeah, but interestingly, like consumerism, kids don't want things. Like my nephew, who's 14, he doesn't, when I ask him what he wants for his birthday, he doesn't really want anything. I have to kind of figure something out because like what he wants, you know, he's on the computer. So it's like, you've got the things you need on the computer, right? So they don't want physical objects, which I think in one sense is a good thing, right? In another sense, it's a terrible thing, but you know.
Yeah, but that's great. That maybe is a good thing, but like, I don't know, going outside and just biking around with your friends and going in the woods and pretending you're, you know, exploring a thing, you know, I mean, all that shit was so goal. It's like, that's the goal of life, I think. I don't know. I just can't imagine that feeling being possible behind a screen, but.
Yeah, no, they do that on Minecraft or whatever.
Do they though? Is it the same feeling? I don't think so.
I have no idea, but you know. Maybe it is. I mean, every generation. It's just like that. Every generation's different than other, you know.
It's like, there's no, you're not using your imagination at all in Minecraft.
But you are. I disagree with
Why?
That.
How?
It's like a play box. It's like there's no set goal. At least with the way that my nephew explained it to me, he's just building things in there. He's just building random little buildings and little stuff and making different worlds and stuff. And he loved it. So, I feel like that
one. Great. Yeah. Well, then I'm not sad anymore. I was never a big video game kid.
I was a big computer. When I first got my first computer, it was a TI-99/4A, and I was probably like 10 or 11 years old, and I fucking, like, for Christmas, and I, like, cried. I cried when I got it. I was so excited. And now I would love to get rid of all the screens.
I made a PowerPoint presentation to my parents about why they should let me get an Xbox, because they had not allowed any video game consoles.
Right. Right.
And they did get me one. And I just never got, I couldn't stick with it. I don't know why. I played it and it just never hit really.
I played games when I was a kid and then I didn't play them for years because I was like dismissive of them. I was like, and then I got back into them during COVID because it was the Nintendo Switch and I bought that and it was the same as the Nintendo I had when I was a kid and it was like nostalgia factor times 100 and it was kind of wonderful for a while. Yeah.
I like those Mario variety of games that are
fun. It's the same game, but it's just like 10,000 times better.
Speaking of spirituality and Mario, I was listening to some guy. He was talking about like how witness consciousness or like being conscious of like the true nature of reality is like Mario Kart, where you're seeing that the character itself isn't actually moving. The screen behind the character is moving. Like if you look at Mario Kart, he doesn't move. You're Mario guy. He just stays there. And then the screen moves.
Right.
You know, so it's like, and that's like his point was that's how reality is actually happening at a more real level is like your consciousness doesn't move through space. It's like the space is loading into the consciousness, is moving into you, you know?
Huh. Another technology-based metaphor for higher consciousness.
Yeah. Well, computers have a lot, I think, because consciousness, we could very well just be in like the VR that people loaded into a billion years ago right now.
Sure.
And we're just about to do it again, like one more layer deeper. So it makes sense that as below, so above, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Can you give me 2 seconds? I got to pee real fast.
I feel obligated to say something funny.
I'm just
going to
let it go.
But it's just like too much pressure. What would be a funny thing to do while he's in the bathroom? I don't know. Oh, man. Be funny, Chris. Come on. Well, pretend I said something funny when he comes back. Huh? And anyway, so that's the funniest thing that happened. And oh my God, it's just so funny. And I'm just on a real roll here talking about, oh, hey, Jeff.
Oh, were you talking about me while I was absent?
Yeah, honestly, I kind of had to be there.
So when you were a kid, did you want to do the film thing? Was it, how old were you when you decided that you wanted to start making films and stuff?
Well, going back to being an only child and having somewhat overbearing parents, even though they were trying their best.
They were overbearing? I didn't know that.
Not overbearing, but very, I experienced them as invasive, but that was.
In what way?
Very, helicoptery, you know, like a lot of I was very scheduled. I felt that there were a lot of expectations on me to perform in certain ways. Again, a lot of this could have been me projecting this stuff because I felt that that's what needed to happen. It wasn't like explicit necessarily, but a good example is my mom signed me up for piano lessons and then would always like harp on me to practice and kind of like sit like really like there was a huge issue between us that I wouldn't practice the piano and then I'd go and then, you know, but I felt like I couldn't quit because I felt like I would disappoint her. Like there's a lot of that kind of thing.
I mean, your mom wanting you to practice piano because she's paying for lessons for you doesn't seem to me to be all that crazy, but I don't know how.
It's not crazy. That's why I'm saying that it's like probably just how I was experiencing it. That was always under a microscope. That's how it felt. So all that to say that the only thing that I found on completely on my own was video stuff. My parents had a camcorder for home movies and they'd just come out with iMovie. And I went to this alternative middle school, new age, feel-goodery type place where we had no grades and barely any classes. And it was kind of like a free-for-all, but in a wonderful way. But I brought this, my camcorder in and we just, my friends in every free moment, we would just fuck around doing like the stupidest sketches and stupid movies, crazy shit. Like, you know, we had like this movie called Helen, which made no sense. I could not even tell you what the plot was, but you know, there was like 20 minutes long and then we would do Helen 2 and then Helen 3 and, you know, show all of like the other kids in school and it was fun. And yeah, that was short lived. I started putting a lot of pressure on myself very quickly. As soon as I like realized that I could do this as a job, it started to become something that I wanted to succeed at. And that was as early as like high school. We had a very like good video curriculum at our high school and there was already a kid in that school who was like very talented. He shot these amazing movies and they're really cool. And so there was already kind of competition. Actually, he's now like a fabulous cinematographer, here in New York, but it's just very funny, how quickly it became that way. And then when I went to college, forget it. I mean, I was like, became such a competitive and, pressurized situation. So
yeah
that was it's a shame because it was like I should have just been having fun all along.
I think that's the wrong perspective to have.
Really?
You don't want to look back at that with shame. Like it's just a part of your life. You probably enjoyed it, frankly.
Yeah, sure, that's true. I mean, college maybe not, but
it's fun to have a passion that you're competitive and trying to do well at. I mean, that's not
But I made myself small.
Sure, maybe, that's what we both do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why we get along.
Yeah.
But yeah, I get you. But, you know, it all worked out. Like, look where
you're
making consistent money doing the thing.
Yeah,
you made
absolutely.
Some cool work. And
produced
an amazing web series that I remember.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing. Like, one of the best things I've ever seen in my life. I started doing recording stuff. I was a theater kid and I used to carry around a tape recorder, like an audio recorder, which again, maybe I'm first full circle here now, right? But I used to carry around an audio recorder and just like randomly, I was probably 14, 15, you know, just interviewed people at rehearsals for these plays that I was in.
Yeah.
And then eventually it just expanded into like a video camera. And then I'd always be the guy who filmed things, which is interesting to think about because when I was there was a certain period where if you had a video camera, like a home video camera, you could shoot anybody at any point and they loved it. They'd be like, yeah, you know, go ahead. And now that's over.
Yes.
Right. I don't want to film anybody anymore because immediately everybody's very aware of the media and whatever. They're too savvy about it now.
So it's very relaxing to go on YouTube and watch like compilations of 90s, like high school videos and stuff where kids are just fucking around and being fun. And it's just like, oh my God, what a time.
I went to Cape Hatteras with my cousins. We were all in our early to mid 20s and we went to Cape Hatteras, had a bang up time, but it's 4 hours long, the video of it.
Wow.
It needs an edit. I'll say that. It needs some editing.
I mean, watching a home movie was never as fun as shooting the home movie.
Well, it's the highlights that are the good.
Yeah. Even before that middle school moment, I used to go and do a fake news show about my block.
had a radio show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Set up in my basement. I set up like my dad kept his old desk down there, and I set it up with like a sign on the front that said like West Branch News, because I lived on West Branch Road.
Right.
And me and my neighbor Emma would co-host the like desk spots, and then we'd like do little remote pieces and stuff. It was very fun.
I didn't have a co-host.
Oh, man. Well, TV format, I feel like you kind of need a co-host.
Right. This was just, yeah.
You're doing more of like a Limbaugh type thing.
Just a random radio show. My dad used to record us. There's old recordings of me as like a very young child, like from like a tape deck that my dad used to have, which was impressive at the time because this was like 1970s, you know, we weren't, certainly audio tape was around, but it wasn't like ubiquitous, right?
Sure.
Yeah. What brings you joy, Chris? What brings you, whatever you decide is the meaning of joy, what is it?
Moving my body, doing yoga, breathing, that really brings me joy. I like once I'm 5 minutes into doing yoga, I feel so grateful to just like be alive and to have a body that works. And I just like, I love that. I'd say that's like my instant joy.
What do you think brought you joy 10 years ago?
10 years ago, I'd say like travel. And, you know, like a kind of adventure. And, you know, that was when I was covering 10 years ago now, I was covering the election for ABC. And I was on the road a ton and just felt super like part of something and plugged in and like,
right.
You know, new city every week. And it was just like, that was a very joyful time.
I mean, that sounds joyful in any time, really. Like, that sounds super fun.
Yeah, for sure.
I remember being jealous of you going on those fucking... Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was incredible. I totally stepped in great, amazing shit with that job.
It's kind of funny though. Like I remember feeling like you were the guy on the inside when I was texting you during the RNC when Trump was in Cleveland, yeah. You know? And I'd be like, oh, I got this guy telling me what's going on from the inside. And like cut to, you know, 10 years later and I just lost my job in politics where I
turned out. You were on the inside.
I was on the inside. Right?
Yeah.
It's so strange.
Yeah, hey, it's if you,
and then we both never want to see it again, right?
I feel very grateful to have had the experience of being like to seeing that world, you
for
know.
Sure.
I think
yeah.
That really it gave me a good, honestly, it made me a lot more relaxed. I feel like before I was so like ideologically kind of oriented, you know, and kind of like my way is right.
You were super big Democrat when I met you. Yeah.
Yeah. And just like very rigid and kind of like so convinced of like the ideological points I was making and like just thought everything else was so, everyone was such an idiot. And
I think we all kind of were though, in a way, like I think
was it just the time or the media environment
something, or? But I think that, I mean, I think it's worse now in a lot of ways, but, a lot of ways, most ways. But yeah, I do think that it was easier to be siloed and more comfortable to be siloed because it wasn't so extreme though, right? It wasn't, the government was still actually doing things together, I think.
And I never felt like I had a hatred for like conservatives, but I never felt that they're like, I just thought I was right. You know what I mean? I just thought that my side was right, you know?
But at that point, it was just an ideological difference.
Sort of. I mean, I was very like, I was very engaged in the Iraq war stuff and felt very like morally superior and kind of compelled to.
Oh, well, there's the problem is the moral superiority. That's where it
becomes.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
I mean, that
yeah.
was the Democratic hallmark though.
This know? Is the Democrat. This is why they don't get elected anymore.
Yeah.
Fucking
yeah,
is. Yeah.
For sure. I mean, but being on the road and seeing also a little bit more of how the sausage is made from a media perspective,
right,
being inside
right.
of that, it's like, you know, I was like, oh, okay. I just got disenchanted, but in a good way. You know, I felt like I was able to just let go of that, that kind of absolutist thing and see it just more for what it was.
Well, that's funny too, because that's like the last glimmer before everything changed, because Trump changed everything with the media.
Yeah.
So like,
well, he exposed what it is.
Oh yeah. That's one of the better things that Trump did, honestly, was the fake news, because it's fairly true. As we've all come to learn.
Well, it also kind of became a self-fulfilling prophecy too. Cause as he entered the environment, is he symptom or is he cause or both?
He's a symptom of he's a symptom of a broken system.
Yeah.
The American government had been on the downslide for years. you know, the systems are collapsing. We're not getting anything done. Nobody's actually talking to each other on either side. Like, this has been going on a slow slide for a while. And I think Trump just kind of put the cap on it, and then just, it now rules the country like a fucking mob boss or whatever, you know? I mean, it's fucking, it's incredible. It's really incredible.
Yeah, it's been an interesting hundreds or so days.
Interesting, yeah.
What was that? When he was in, we're going to date this podcast, but when he was in Qatar, what was, did you see the clip of him walking down a hallway and there were all these women with long hair kind of like draping their heads around as like some ceremonial dance.
No,
it was so unsettling to me. I'm sure it's some wonderful ritual and ceremony, but
eyes wide shut or something.
It was
right?
Very interesting. Yeah. Like, it had, I feel bad if this is some kind of a religious thing that I'm not aware of, but it did feel a little like The Ring kind of.
I did see he played YMCA after the fucking speech that he gave out there. you gotta love him. Let's do YMCA. And then there was a video of like a room full of like guys, you know, turbans and all this kind of thing, and just like YMCA blaring. like what are you? It's a weird image, right?
Wow. Did he do his little dance, his little fists?
No, I don't think he did the jacking off two guys at once dance.
Yeah.
Which football players were doing.
It's a funny little
after
dance.
He got elected. Yeah. But
Yeah. It's funny.
If Trump was like, I want to be on your podcast, which he will at some point, let's be clear. But like, what do I do?
I just don't see how you pass that up.
Yeah, but I think that I'd lose a lot of friends in that one.
Why? Why would you lose friends? I don't understand.
Platforming. You know what I mean? How could you platform him?
Oh, yeah. As if. He is the platform.
There's no clear like heir to the MAGA throne at this point. So when he dies, like, I don't know what that movement's going to do, because they really don't have. I mean, J.D. Vance is just not doing it. It's going to be hard to keep that going without the most charismatic fucking dude. Right.
Yeah. We'll enter a new phase of the deconstructive era after that.
I honestly see the thing that's go two ways. We can go one way in which, you know, they lose badly in the midterms, which they probably will. In two more years, they lose the presidency to whoever it is. And we kind of go back to a period of non-history, if you will, or whatever it is. Or it just keeps going. Getting worse and worse and worse, and then we have a American Revolution part two or a Civil War part two or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think that, but more. Well, I think certain states and stuff are going to start to figure out how to be a little more self-sufficient. In
I don't think
ways.
We'll stay together as a union in 100
I mean,
years.
We'll probably
we won't
stay
be.
Together, but it just I think there'll be a lot more circling of the wagons, so that we're not dependent as much on like the kind of whims of the federal government, especially like the major economic centers and like the surrounding territories, I would guess. And then, you know, there's going to be, I mean, God willing not, but it would appear that we're heading towards some kind of a major war conflict. So I'd say he may, I could see him like having his last day in office, and then like the first 5 seconds of whoever gets in after him, it's like shit goes down. You know what I mean? And then that's the thing that defines the next decade or plus of politics.
Yeah, I wonder.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I hope not. I hope maybe the background frequency is changing enough that could be avoided. But it does feel like that's part of the collapse of systems will be some kind of a destructive moment.
I like to think that that we've outgrown the idea of a quote unquote world war, you know, that. Yeah, there'll be small conflagrations. Ukraine, and these not are small, obviously, but Ukraine, Israel, blah, blah, blah. But in terms of like the entire world erupting into some sort of a giant war, which would basically mean the U.S. gets involved in another country. Plus, we have a giant military. So like it's not like people want to fuck with us.
No, I don't think it would be necessarily us against somebody, but it would be us in a proxy dynamic.
Oh, like a Vietnam, right?
Yeah, we're already doing that, right? And on several fronts. And now Taiwan will be another front of that. And I think there could be some kind of a, you know, the reason that there would be a actual like world war type situation is when the dominant currency status of the United States starts to become seriously threatened. That'll be the thing that will actually push us into like a broad scale war.
Did you know that, sorry, tangenting in my head, but you know that there was more than one monk that burned himself?
Yeah.
There was like three or four of them.
Yeah. There's only one photo though.
God, can you imagine?
Imagine being burning myself alive.
Doing it yourself. I mean, good Lord.
Yeah, no. I can't imagine. What's that called? when you do that?
Self-immolation.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the guy did it in front of the DC. Remember that? It was like a couple years back.
Yeah.
And he lived, I think, which is like the worst way to do it.
He did. Like, but no, but he did ultimately die, didn't he?
I don't know. He was like in the hospital for a long time. I don't know if he lived or died, but like you can't live. You've got to do that right if you're going to do it.
No.
But yeah, can you imagine? Like, if at least the pain would end if you're burning yourself and you're going to die. But like, I wonder how long. God, I'm getting into a hole there. Disregard. I'll start another podcast about my questions about what it's like to self-immolation podcast. Yeah, that's probably not
that's
been
not taken.
Taken.
The self-immolation.
The self-immolation podcast. This is a show all about self-immolation.
Brought to you by Manscaped.
I wonder if you could do a podcast. That's actually interesting. How many times has this happened? And is there a story behind each one of them that's interesting?
Deep dive into the personal lives of the self-immolators.
And the podcast gets big and then we run out of people to talk about. And then we have to go out and try to convince
people self-immolating.
Right. We try to convince people. We start a TikTok trend.
It's like the ALS ice bucket challenge. It's the self-immolation show, self-immolation challenge.
Where would you say you'd like to be in 15 years?
I'd like to really be living with a very open heart in 15 years. I'd like to really feel like I have the dexterity to choose to be open-hearted in as much of many circumstances as I can, and just to really have embraced just like finding a balance of like effort and ease in life and try to have some mastery over that. I think that would be a good place to be.
Beyond the mental, though.
I don't think it's all mental, but you're talking about like what my circumstances would be.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I am open to whatever life has in store. I think I can feel myself moving towards stepping a little bit more into the yoga side of my life from a career perspective. And I think I've been trying to feel my way into how that looks for a while. But the calling for that has not gone away. So I definitely need to move in that direction in some way, shape, or form and be of service. And I really love teaching in some capacity and synthesizing some of these concepts into ways that people can really like feel and get value out of. So I'd like to be able to do something like that, but in a grounded way that's not part of some kind of wellness scene. So
yeah, it's tricky. The wellness scene these days has gotten so large that it's become kind of a parody of itself in a strange sort of way.
Yeah. And yeah. I think a lot of times you can miss the signal for the noise very easily.
Right.
And I think embodiment is probably the antidote to that, like actually getting into the physical body and actually feeling what it's like to be you. Sensationally. If I like make the decision to open like a business that's more brick and mortar, then I can see that being my life. And I do fantasize about that, just like really just putting all of my energy and focus and creativity into that embodiment practice and teaching that and kind of developing that and managing people who want to bring their own thing to it too. But that'll come when it's ready to come.
Well, I would totally go to Chris's mushroom and yoga experience, whatever you want to call it.
Well, great.
Yeah. I'd come to that.
Yeah. I mean,
I'd help you with the lighting. I can help you with the lighting in that, of course.
Yeah, lighting isn't very important. I don't know. I think it would probably be nice to have like had a kid. So I'm interested in that.
Reproduction.
Yeah, reproduction and kind of like experiencing that aspect of being a human. But then again, who knows? I mean, I always saw myself as being a dad. So it was kind of always part of my like future vision for myself. But I'm in trust that if that's like meant to happen, it will kind of happen naturally.
I never saw myself as a dad. Until I was with that woman who had the two kids.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, now I definitely get it.
Yeah.
Because I like understood what it was, as opposed to like what it was with my father, you know?
Yeah. It's cool to have a little clan. I mean, I like the idea of just like, cause you know, it's also just cool, I think, to see a human being to just develop and be so intimate and witness that process and have influence over that process. I mean,
yeah, it's a real double-edged sword, I think. And like, I have like regrets about, maybe I could have had kids. I don't know. I feel like maybe it's probably for the best that I don't, frankly. But I feel like as a result of this and not being tied down at 51, like I'm like, oh, I can get a remote job and work anywhere, which most of my friends here could not do.
Yeah,
and I kind of started realizing, oh, I've got an advantage here. I need to use what I, in a weird way, consider like a disadvantage or a weakness in a bizarre way to live the fucking life, right?
Yeah, dude, for sure.
Yeah. And I don't want to continue to mirror the people that I'm kind of around, you know?
Yeah, I do. And I do value freedom, but I think I just feel like at a certain point I'll feel the call for it or I won't. I don't know. I'm definitely not like dying to. And, you know, I don't know. I have this feeling that I'll kind of meet a woman who really wants to go that direction and I will, you know?
Well, there you go.
That's kind of how I see it happening.
Use your eggs.
My eggs?
Whatever you got. I guess men don't need to freeze their sperm, do they? We always got plenty.
I guess you can freeze your sperm.
Because like as we get older, they get like, you know, they start to swim sideways and shit.
Yeah, there are there are practices to help.
Oh, is there like an Ayurvedic kind of practice that I can perform on my sperm?
Yeah, there's awesome. Brahmacharian sweet. Practices for sure.
Sweet.
And also the Chinese medicine, Taoism, has a lot of practices around maintaining vitality as well.
Because I'm worried about the health of my sperm.
You should be worried about it.
Why should I be? What do my sperm need to do? Nothing.
Sperm are like the rare earth mineral of the body. If you look up the constituent chemical makeup of sperm, it's like they have the most rare molecules that exist in the human body or inside of a sperm. It's like incredible. They're very nutrient dense.
Right. But like it's still going out of me.
What do you mean?
It's leaving my body, generally speaking, the sperm.
Generally speaking, it's leaving your body?
Well, I don't know. What does it do? You think it actually affects the body when it's just sitting in there?
Yes. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yes. Just insofar as replenishing it is a highly taxing process. It takes a lot of, like I said, like the makeup. And look, I'm not a doctor, but this is just my belief and based on the things that I care about.
Not medical advice. Yeah.
Not medical advice. But, you know, it takes 72 days for a sperm to form.
I feel terrible for my sperm. I'll be honest. I feel really bad for them.
Yeah, you should.
Because they have no purpose. They have no purpose. They do.
They absolutely do. That's your life force energy. It's a big value to you as a person.
Now I'm going to feel even worse when I like masturbate. I'll be like, well, look what I just did.
Yeah.
Look what I did.
You should. You should feel worse.
But they do say that actually if there's health studies that say you should, you know, release quite a bit, it makes you less prone to cancers down there.
Yeah, I actually think that that's like a POPS study that was way over, that got way more traffic than it was due.
I'm going with that. That's a good one.
It's like, that's like, oh, drinking red wine is good for you. It's like, no, it's not.
Well, they used to think eggs were bad for you too, so.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, it's like whenever you see a thing where it's like validating a terrible habit that you know in your gut is bad for you, and you're like, oh, well, there's the science. It's like, yeah, no.
Yeah, but with eggs, it's weird because when I was a kid, I grew up and I thought eggs are terrible because all this news was coming out. And I still struggle with the idea that like eggs are now like healthy to eat.
Yeah, I mean, they have a lot of cholesterol, but I think that
science says it doesn't really cause more an increased cholesterol for something.
Because they know it's like good and bad cholesterol.
But it's still difficult for me to suddenly turn it around because I did think of the eggs as the enemy for many years.
My dad also has a weird thing. He pretends to be allergic to them, but he's not. He just doesn't like something about them.
Should call him out on that next time.
I do every time.
Dad, that's bullshit. You know you're not allergic. You've never been tested.
Yes. This is how the conversation goes.
Force eggs down his throat. All right. I have one additional question. I should have a sound effect here, like trumpets or something. Something. No?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And the question is, what do you think happens when you die?
Oh, yeah. I think there's kind of an unraveling of being physical, and you just kind of become aware of like a much bigger version of yourself. I think there's still like a self-image, but it's so, so vast that we couldn't even begin to like begin to even understand what it felt like to like have that broad of a kind of like experience of self. But I do think there is a persistent experience of self that goes on. And then whether you rebundle up into like a new manifested thing or not, I don't really know. I think that everything that's manifested now is a rebundling of energy that existed before the physical thing did. But, you know, I think that like the energy that I am is also what you are. So it's kind of like a consciousness of like being everything. I think something like that. But you, like, you can't describe it. Like, you can't put it into words or even begin to like feel it when you're in a more limited form.
Yeah, that would be my answer as well.
I think it's pretty good.
I mean, I think it's a good answer. Yeah. I
not the answer. Like, I think that the experience is probably fairly good. Like, I'm not dying to die, but I think it will be a good experience. I'm when it happens, I'll be looking forward to it in the moments before.
That'd be great. I would love to look forward to that.
Well, that goes back to the personality or bliss state. You know, it's like, I think the bliss state is kind of the death thing, and personality is kind of what we experience while we're here.
Yeah, but like the reality of what we understand as death is hard to dismiss, you know, as much as I'd like to think that I'm...
Like what?
The reality that I experience and understand, for the most part, tells me that I'm going to live another 20, 30, 40 years, whatever, and then I will die, right? And all I know is that my physical existence on this planet will end. So without any empirical evidence necessarily of anything beyond that, that is what I'm left living with.
But that's I think that speaks to the like overemphasis on like mental experience that we kind of have right now in culture. I think if you really tap into experiencing yourself more like as a feeling and as like a sense of consciousness more regularly, it won't seem as like, it would seem more intuitive that there and kind of like almost obvious that there's like an ongoing conscious experience, even if it's ineffable, because like when you're in that state, even while you're alive, it's very real. It's not like a mental thought or like a fantasy. It's something that you can actually be experienced. So I think that's why I feel a little more like it's, I'm not having to fight so much kind of like logical headwinds with that point of view, because like, I feel like I've had glimpses of that possibility and I've seen how my experience of it expands through practice. So it's not like, oh, this is just something I'm going to like believe with no evidence whatsoever. Like, because there's no evidence that nothing happens when you die either.
Yeah, but that's like saying there's no evidence that there's no God either, and that's evidence. I'm just saying that like what I am generally left with is a basic understanding of the universe as dictated by what I see and read and has been scientifically proven, and that our physical bodies do die. We're learning new things about how the brain and consciousness work, but as of now, I'm left with thinking that we do die, and then that's, you know, perhaps it.
What if you experienced something that made you sure of it, though?
I would question what the part of me that the surety.
So you don't have a sense of like, there's not like a sense of inner knowing that could exist that just like gave you peace. You feel like you needed to be validated by.
My logical mind really doesn't. Like I've experienced very bizarre and transcendent things on mushrooms, but like when I come back, I'm often like, yeah, that was amazing and transcendent, but like there's also a lot suggesting that like, you know, your brain fires in this way.
Yeah, well, the nature of the brain is like another example. It's like the brain, the only reason there's like the consensus reality is because of the way the brain vibrates. And as soon as it vibrates at a slightly different frequency, all of a sudden you're out the window in a whole different realm of what's happening. And I mean, it's only not real in the sense that that's not the like baseline kind of like oscillation of the brain with every other being that we're interacting with. But like, the only reason any experience is rendering into our awareness is because the brain is oscillating at a certain frequency. You just turn the dial and then a new thing is rendering into your experience. Like that for me is valid, is a little bit of a evidence for like something way beyond like the physical body and the like stuff that you can feel and see, you know?
And that's how this podcast will end. Chris, thank you for coming out of the podcast.
You're so welcome. It was a pleasure.
I love you.
Love you too.
And there he goes, Chris Casey, everyone.
I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you'll continue to tune in. And if you did enjoy it, I hope you'll tell everyone you know and everyone you don't know, everyone you used to know, that woman you used to date years ago but who broke your heart, that friend of yours who you had for your entire life but who won't talk to you anymore. Send them a message. Tell them about 1F Jeff. Maybe it'll bring you two together. Probably not. But if it does, you let me know and I'll have you on the podcast to talk about it. You can email me at 1fjeffpod@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. I did another one. So that's something, right?
Very good, Jeffrey.